This is Vermont Edition. I'm Steve Zandin for Bob Kinzel. When IBM sneezes, Vermont gets a cold. It's a well-worn expression, but it seems appropriate as the global tech giant apparently prepares to jettison hundreds of jobs at its plant in Essex Junction. Layoffs of that scale, layoffs that involve high-paying jobs, have both a broad impact in terms of the state's employment picture and send a shudder through the communities around the plant where IBMers live and spend their earnings. That second reason is why Essex Town Manager Pat Scheidel says his community is keenly attuned to changes at the plant.
I would say there's a real hypersensitivity. Everybody takes a deep breath and they're slow to exhale.
Today we're going to talk about the impact of the job cuts at IBM, and we invite your comments and questions. Perhaps you're among those who's been laid off by the company now or in the past. Perhaps you've got some insight into IBM's influence on the region's economy or thoughts on IBM's future in Vermont. You can join the conversation by calling 1-800-639-2211, or you can email us at vermontedition@vpr.net, 1-800-639-2211. We're joined right now by Labor Commissioner Annie Noonan and University of Vermont economist Art Wolf. Thank you both for being here today. Annie Noonan, let's start with you. Here we are shortly after noon on Friday, the 30th day from our understanding of from when IBM gave notice to those employees that they were being laid off. What do we know now in terms of numbers that we didn't know 30 days ago?
Well, the only numbers that we know for sure are the numbers of people that have come to any of the Department of Labor rapid response sessions or our workshops. So to date, we have seen about 320 dislocated workers from the IBM workforce. That is not the official count. The official count will have to come to the Department of Labor by Monday. The Employment Security Board rule says that any employer in the state of Vermont who has a mass separation, and that's defined as 25 or more employees being laid off at any given time, that the employer has to let us know within 24 hours after the separation takes effect. So most of the people we've seen from IBM have a layoff notice of today at, you know, close of business today. So essentially, we would expect that sometime by the end of the day tomorrow or by the time we open doors on Monday morning for business, that we'll have our list from IBM. And that will be the official count of the number of layoffs.
And there is a separate federal act, the WARN Act, but that applies to much larger layoffs, 500 or more employees. So we can assume that since that hasn't been triggered, that the IBM layoff is below that figure?
We've made the same assumption. I mean, the WARN Act has several triggers, but the one that, that would be applicable here would be a layoff of more than 500 employees. And since the since IBM has not filed under WARN, we're presuming that the layoff number will be under 500.
Do you get a sense from, you know, the several hundred people you've seen come contact your department through the rapid response events, what sorts of jobs we're talking about?
Well, you know, as expected, we've seen a lot of folks who are engineers and computer people. And we've also seen people who are involved in other aspects of the IBM operation, such as fiscal people, a graphic designer, project managers for different areas. So it's been a, you know, it's been a wide array, but obviously the big two would be engineering folks and computer folks.
And these, we assume, are high-paying jobs, generally?
Yes. You know, we were assuming that most of what we've seen on the intake forms indicate that folks are making a good salary.
Now, you have another event coming up in Burlington on Monday, and that's there's a job fair that's part of that as well, correct?
Correct. The job fair on Monday is actually was put together in response to the IBM layoffs, but it's not limited for attendance. For people from other places can come. So, for example, the Energizer plant in St. Albans, which is slated to cease operations in September, we may see people coming down, workers from the Energizer plant. So it's a large job fair but basically open to any dislocated worker in the state of Vermont.
You've got employers coming to this job fair, probably a lot of employers who assume they'll be talking to IBM employees who have been laid off. Can you give us a sense of what the employer participation is
like? Yeah, we've been very excited because we've had we planned this for inviting up to 80 employers, and we've had more than 80 employers asked to attend. So we're very, very glad to see that. And the criteria that we put there was, you know, you have to have current job openings and have to staff the table to talk to the workers about your openings, accept resumes. So we're very excited because we've gotten very large employers and very we keyed towards some of the occupational groupings we saw coming out of IBM. So we have some very, you know, we're very excited about that. We also have training providers coming because most of the folks who are dislocated workers, whether they're the IBM or any other dislocated worker, should be able to tap into the Workforce Investment Act money, the Federal Workforce Investment Act money, and use that money if they need it for job retraining.
It's probably hard to tell, but is there any way to tell among those 80 employers how many total job openings are we talking about?
Well, we don't know, but most of the folks, you know, have said anywhere, you know, I'm hiring for half a dozen people to I'm hiring up to 100. We have an employer who's a very large, well-known employer who said, I have 100 openings currently.
So if you put yourself in the shoes of one of these engineers, an engineer who's been laid off from IBM, do you feel optimistic about your job prospects, about finding a comparable job in terms of wages and skills and not having to move somewhere to take that job?
I do think that there are lots of opportunities for these folks. One, because it's a well-educated workforce, and they do have transferable skills. Sometimes, you know, they may have been working in a particular area of engineering, but they, you know, if we had an employer who said, I need five engineers, and I need them to be trained in my process, this dislocated worker funding from the federal government, we can actually go into that employer's setting, have that employer decide how that training will be done, and it won't cost that employer a dime because we can tap into the federal WIA money, the dislocated WIA money, to have that employer train those folks. So we will be working the floor that day to remind employers if they see candidates they're interested in hiring, but they may need specifically to work with them to come up to speed on their skill set or their specific process. We can do that with this money.
Talking about the IBM layoffs that apparently are occurring officially today from our information and could be in the hundreds today on Vermont Edition, welcoming your calls at 1-800-639-2211 or your emails at vermontedition@vpr.net. We're with Vermont Labor Commissioner Annie Noonan, and we're also joined by University of Vermont economist Art Wolf. Art, I know you've done a lot of work on, you know, tracking the job market in Vermont, looking at where the growth is occurring, looking at areas where job growth isn't occurring. What's your assessment of the job prospects for the people who are being laid off at IBM?
Well, I'd say that it was pretty good, given their skill levels and also given their experience. They've had lots of experience working in a – well, not necessarily a large organization isn't that important, but working with other people, you know, working as part of a team. And so when Annie was talking about all these employers who are attending, I think there's a good reason attending the job fair that's going on. I think there's a good reason for that. These are not your typical people who are looking for jobs, people who are normally unemployed or just entering the job market. These are people who have lots of skills and lots of experience. So it's kind of a golden opportunity for Vermont employers who are looking for workers who are having a hard time finding the specific people they're looking for. Generally speaking, for extremely skilled workers, you can't find them very often locally unless you steal them from another company. And it's very difficult to get people to move to Vermont for a variety of reasons. Number one being it's just difficult for people to move. People don't like to move. They, you know, have to uproot themselves from where they were to take a job, and they may not like doing that. There's family issues. But these are people who are here already. So it's, you know, I think that these folks are going to be in fairly good shape. And plus, the economy is doing fairly well. If this had happened in 2008 or 2009, I would say it would have been a different story.
These are tech jobs, clearly, but do we also classify them as manufacturing jobs, Art?
Well, yeah. I think the public at large has kind of an old-fashioned image of manufacturing, kind of from the old Charlie Chaplin movie, people turning bolts on an assembly line. IBM is officially a manufacturing company, but a lot of these people who are unemployed or are being laid off, they're really doing jobs that aren't really manufacturing-specific. People in finance, people that are project managers, computer scientists. You know, those are the kind of occupations that you can find all over the board in all sorts of different industries and firms in Vermont, not necessarily manufacturing.
So 450, let's just use that number. We don't know, but that's a number that's been circulating. I mean, it's one thing for the economy, the job market to be able to absorb, you know, some jobs, but that's a lot of jobs. You think the capacity is there?
I think so, and there's a number of reasons. Number one, you've got to remember that the state of Vermont, there's about 300,000 jobs. Now, obviously, someone who's laid off from IBM isn't going to go down to Rutland or Brattleboro or even Newport, most likely. But even in just looking at Chittenden County, there's about 100,000 jobs in Chittenden County. So this is a pretty small percent, you know, about 4%, let's say, of the jobs in the county. And the way the labor markets in the United States and in Vermont work, we tend to think of on a monthly basis the state gaining or losing a few hundred jobs. That's really a net number. Really what's going on in a labor market, there's probably about 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 people who are being laid off or leaving their jobs every month in Vermont, and almost an equal number that are being hired by new firms or expanding firms. All we really see in the official statistics that Annie's office puts out is the net number. So we could have a 500 job increase in the state of Vermont, but that is caused by 5,000 people losing their jobs in the month and 5,500 people finding new jobs in firms that are expanding. So I think in the normal churn of the labor market, these people are going to rise to the top because of their skill levels.
Annie Noonan, I want to turn to you again for a moment to talk about this notification law that you outlined. It's been, you know, a month since Governor Shumlin was told by IBM that we're going to lay off some people. The state still doesn't have an exact number. Would it be helpful for you to know that number earlier?
The earlier that we get notification, the quicker that we can adjudicate any claims for unemployment, and we can also get people set up in Vermont JobLink, which is a job search system. And we have a very effective and aggressive reemployment program in the Department of Labor through our REA program and just basically our job counseling system in the local offices. But the intent of the mass notification, mass separation notice to the department is so that when someone puts in a claim for unemployment, that we can immediately check it against an employer's list. So in a situation where someone is laying off 100 people, if they give us that list up front, then as those claims come in, we don't have to then send a separation notice to the employer asking the employer, did this person really get laid off or did you fire them? You know, so sometimes you might say, as a claimant, I was laid off yesterday, and we send the notice to the employer, and they say, no, he wasn't laid off. He carried the cash box out the back door last night, so he was actually fired. So we have to adjudicate without specific information from the employer right up front. We have to contact the employer, wait for the employer to get back to us, and so we're in essence, this cuts that whole step out, so we can actually move that paperwork forward as quickly as possible. And that's obviously of great benefit to somebody who's just lost their job.
That step's still being cut out if IBM or any company waits till the last minute to inform
It makes it much more difficult for us. So, you know, certainly we would like to see employers, when they know, give us the notification at the point that their employees have gotten their notice. It would help us to get the notice at the same time.
When you do get the information from IBM or anyone else who triggers that threshold, what are they actually providing you with? It sounds like they're providing you with more than a number. They're providing you with actual names.
They actually do. They will provide us with the name and the Social Security number of the employee.
Any sense of the job the person was doing?
No, they're not required to provide the specific job information.
Would that be
sure, that would be helpful, too, because, again, we have a job link system. So if we knew that we picked up, you know, 20 employees who were electrical engineers, we could run them through our job link system and immediately push out an email to them to say, we have 10 openings for electrical engineers in the state of Vermont. So that would be helpful information. But the Employment Security Board rule was written a number of years ago, and I don't think it's been looked at at least since I've been there. So we will take a look at that rule coming up soon.
What kind of changes would you like to see?
I mean, I think at the point that the employee is notified, so that it's no secret to that person, I think that we would like to get notification either, you know, within a day or two or a couple of days thereafter. That would be really helpful. Because generally speaking, once an employee receives a layoff notice, they call our offices to ask questions, and it would be helpful for us if we actually had some information concurrently from the employer so we could work with the employee more effectively.
So is this something that needs to be handled legislatively, basically, to make those changes?
Well, one of two ways. It can either be handled legislatively, or the department can issue an amended rule and put it through the rulemaking process.
So that's something within your power?
That is something within our power.
And then is that a step you'll take?
I think it is a step we will be looking at.
Looking at or taking?
I think we will probably move that forward if the legislature isn't addressing it quicker than we are.
I realize this law isn't triggered that often because 25 people or more is significant. But in your to your knowledge, do employers generally inform the state sooner than later when they're able to?
Generally, what I've seen is you're correct, Steve, that most of the layoff notices we get don't fall above 25, so we don't officially get it. But I would say that many of the employers we deal with, if there's 10 or 15 or 20, they will send us that information pretty much as soon as they've told their employees, because what they're looking to is to basically facilitate the employees through the process for unemployment or job reemployment services. So they've been very cooperative for the most part.
All right. Annie Noonan, thanks for coming in today
to talk with us.
We are talking about job cuts at IBM, the impact they'll have on individuals, on the local economy, and on the state generally. Our number, 1-800-639-2211, or you can email us at vermontedition@vpr.net. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. This is Vermont Edition. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Steve Zind in for Bob Kinzel. IBM has been the source of thousands of Vermont jobs for many years, but the number has been in decline for more than a decade, and it appears as many as 450 or so jobs may be disappearing as of today at IBM's Essex Junction plant. We're talking about what that means. And if you have any comments, questions about IBM's future in Vermont, perhaps you're someone affected by the layoffs, we'd like to hear from you today on Vermont Edition at 1-800-639-2211, or the email address is vermontedition@vpr.net. In a few minutes, we'll be talking with an analyst about IBM's global business and recent earning problems, but we want to focus a bit more on the Vermont impact of the company with the University of Vermont economist Art Wolf, who's with us today. Art, you know, looking at the history of that past decade or so in job cuts, we had 700 workers laid off in 2003, 189 workers and 100 contract workers in 2008, several hundred in 2009, and now we've got this layoff. You know, is it safe to assume that we're just on a continuous decline in terms of the employment at the Essex Junction plant?
Well, if it was a continuous decline, that would imply that the plant's going to leave, and nobody knows that except for the higher-ups in IBM. But the plant has gone through many iterations. It started out back in the 50s and 60s making electromechanical devices. Then it started making chips, and IBM is no longer the chip-making powerhouse it used to be. So IBM has really changed as a company, and as a result, the IBM plant in Essex Junction has changed in terms of its role. And IBM's been having some rough times recently. I was just looking at their stock price, and their stock price is basically where it was a year ago. And those of us who have investments know that the stock market's been on a real roll for the last year. So IBM's been having some serious problems. Even though it's a giant company, it's part of the Dow Jones. Who knows what its future is going to be like? They have a fairly new CEO, and how she leads the company is going to be very crucial.
Is it then safe to assume that all of these changes we're seeing, these layoffs at the Essex Junction plant, those are due to global, competitive, market, factors well beyond Vermont's control?
Well, a lot of them are. Obviously, there's two sides to any business. One is the demand side, which you talked about, the global issues. And the other one is the cost side. And if Vermont is a high-cost place to do what IBM needs to have done, then they're not going to be here. And those numbers are internal to IBM. But a lot of it is just how the market has changed. Back in the 1950s and 60s, there was kind of a saying in computer departments of big corporations that nobody ever got fired by buying an IBM product because they were the product. They were such a big company and had such a dominant role in the market that the U.S. government sued them for being a monopoly in 1968, 1969. Now we think IBM a monopoly. You got to be kidding. You know, that industry has changed and IBM's struggling.
You know, beyond the specific job losses at the plant and what that means for the individuals who now have to face going out into the job market, we've heard about kind of a multiplier effect that IBM jobs have on the local economy. Perhaps you could say that about any manufacturer, but IBM being the size manufacturer it is in Essex. Can you explain, you know, how the layoffs sort of have a ripple effect if they do?
Yeah, well, there's two things. So let me talk about that type of multiplier in a second. The first one we tend to forget about is IBM buys a lot of inputs in the local economy, not the least of which are construction services. You know, when they have to put in new assembly facilities, new gas lines, all sorts of things, that they hire a lot of local people to do that kind of work, construction companies and things like that, and all sorts of other supplies. The multiplier effect usually refers to the other end, which is they employ a lot of people, and those people are pretty well paid, and they spend money in the local economy. You know, they go out to lunch, and they go out to dinner, and they buy houses, and they buy local products. A company like IBM with the high wages that they pay, those dollars that they pay have a strong multiplier effect because of the magnitude of it and because of its size. So if IBM was to ever leave, there would be a lot of businesses that would be affected. Now that depends on kind of the time frame. If we think about it, IBM used to have 8,000 or 9,000 employees. Now they're down to 3,000. So they've lost about 5,000 or 6,000 employees. The economy in Chittenden County is doing very well. If they left, that would be a 3,000 job loss. Well, they've already declined by twice that amount. It just has taken place over almost a 10-year period.
Well, given what you said, does IBM still play a significant role as it once did in both the state and the local economy?
Well, it's smaller, and that's probably a good thing because the best economy is a diversified economy. You don't want to have an economy that is heavily reliant on only one industry or only one firm. Just look at Michigan for an example of a state that was reliant on one industry and how that affected it. I think it's good that IBM is not as big as it used to be. It's still an important part of the economy and plays an important role. So it's not that it's irrelevant, but I think that we've got a diversified economy in Chittenden County, and that's good.
Is a layoff on the scale of hundreds something that we would see reflected in the monthly unemployment figure in Vermont?
It's hard to say. It might be a little blip. Again, remember, there's 300,000 jobs in the state of Vermont. So 300 jobs is one tenth of 1%. So, you know, if the unemployment rate ticks up by 0.1%, it might be because of IBM. It might be because of other factors. I doubt that we're going to see the unemployment rate in Vermont in July or whenever the numbers actually this is the middle of July. It probably wouldn't really affect the numbers until August. So the August numbers, I doubt that we'll see a noticeable increase in the unemployment rate because of this.
And just to sort of step back a moment, as I mentioned earlier, I know you have done a lot of work looking at various sectors in the Vermont economy, where the job growth is occurring. Can you sort of give us an overview of what direction we're moving in terms of where the jobs are these days?
So if we look at over the last few years as the economy has grown out of the recession, the two big sectors that have grown are healthcare services and professional and business services. And that's really a very broad group of companies, of businesses ranging from consultants, engineers, accountants, lawyers, all sorts of businesses like that. Manufacturing has not been growing much. Construction has not been growing much. So those two, professional services and healthcare services, are really where our growth is. And having said that, we've got to remember that given the demographics of Vermont, Our working age population is not growing anymore. Our overall population has basically been flat for the last 2 years. So we're not going to really see a whole lot of growth anywhere other than to the extent that it in any sector it grows and other sectors shrink.
When you look at the economy, you mentioned the Vermont economy is looking better, as is the national economy by many accounts. Do you see any signs of trouble or any areas that worry you?
Well, I think the big worries are beyond the borders of Vermont. They're what happens nationally and internationally. Those are still very questionable. What Europe is still very, very weak. China's slowing down. There's really no global engine of economic growth, and that's worrisome. We're still struggling to get out of the remnants of the financial crisis in the United States. The recovery has been very slow. And so there's still a lot more risk out there than normal, especially for this time in a recovery period.
We had a post at our Facebook page from Will, who writes that IBM is in a downward spiral. Will writes, lower market share leads to headcount cuts to bring the numbers in line, which leads to lower productivity and bad morale. And adds, by the way, July 12th is my last day at IBM. So Will, apparently, one of the people who received layoff notices last month at the IBM plant in Essex Junction. Maybe that's a good time to bring in another guest. Art Wolf, stay with us. But we want to talk now with Arne Olsen. He's the money manager who studies business models. Arne, I hope I'm pronouncing your first name right. It's Olsen.
Yeah, that's right.
Sure. And you've written about IBM over the last few months for the website SeekingAlpha.com. You've also written for The Street and Financial Times, done some analysis of IBM. So appreciate you joining us from your office in San Diego.
Sure.
Well, you know, for those of us who, you know, only know IBM as a Vermont employer, give us a more global view of what the company does today.
Yeah, IBM has been considered the gold standard in IT industry. IT industry is vast. It includes Hewlett Packard, IBM, Oracle. It's a $3.7 trillion industry worldwide. And IBM's always had the number one position for quite some time. The problem is, and the reason I picked up analysis of the company last year was what I saw in the financial statements, which is a company under quite some stress. To paint the picture, it's pretty easy. I can without getting into detailed accounting terminology. Let's just say revenue or sales have been going down while profits have been going up, and that's just not a realistic situation. That's not a situation that can realistically endure for very long. Obviously, there's got to be a point at which it's got to stop. And it continued into the fourth quarter last year, and I wrote an article called Is IBM in Trouble? And again, I wrote another article about 3 months ago saying this could be a disaster in the making. And that is what it appears to me is going on is IBM has taken a large amount of resources and devoted it to this earnings promise that they've made to Wall Street. They promised Wall Street that they'd make $20 per share by 2015, and everything about this business model is now oriented towards this $20 earnings per share goal. Everything else goes to the wayside. Except for them to accomplish this goal, and they're doing it by buying back stocks, by acquiring other companies, paying out lots in dividends. But that doesn't, you know, the basic problem is the paradigm in IT is changing, and IBM is still on this earnings-driven path to $20 a share in 2015. Really what they need to be doing is innovating and trying to get on the cutting edge of the changes, specifically the move to the cloud.
Tell us, yeah, exactly, what is changing in terms of the industry and the paradigm change you talked about that's creating these problems for IBM?
You know, it's actually really interesting. I read a book by The guy's last name is Carr, and he wrote it about 5 or 6 years ago. Basically, the metaphor is, back in the early 1800s, companies had their own local power plants. You know, if you're going to generate electricity, you had to build your own power plant in the backyard. And so all these businesses all over the country in the early 1800s had localized power plants. And then with the development of alternating current, we centralized power generation and sold it from a central location. That's what's happening to computing technology. Instead of building power plants or these huge data centers, these huge on-premise computing environment, we're centralizing computing and selling it, or basically renting it out, rather than having companies build these huge power plants in their backyard to generate computing power. It's a complete paradigm change, and IBM is not ready.
This is kind of the public cloud versus the private cloud?
Yes. Public cloud is, again, to go with the electricity metaphor, you can literally plug into the wall, plug into a socket. By plugging into the internet, you can harness 1,000 or 10,000 servers and rent it, pay as you go. Now, the old paradigm, and which IBM is a big proponent of, is to sell, Netflix used to be an IBM customer, to sell them these huge, build out this huge multi-million dollar data center and do all the computing on-premise. Well, Netflix actually figured it out a couple of years ago, and they said no to IBM, and they said, we're going to instead rent our computing power and put it in the cloud. And since then, Netflix has gone 100% into the cloud, mm-hmm. and IBM is no longer a vendor for them.
What does IBM need to do, in your view?
Wow, it's a tough go, because here's what they're doing. Their model's under tremendous pressure because they're trying to make this $20 earnings per share, when what they really need to do is dramatically innovate and move towards the cloud, because this is a force that's not going to be stopped. It's basic economics. Do you want to... companies are finding that they can save 75-80% by moving their computing power to the cloud. So IBM is left trying to defend this legacy business with all this hardware and all this personnel devoted to private clouds, if you will, or on-premise computing. And economically, it just doesn't make sense. So what we saw in Q1, the first quarter, was a dramatic drop in IBM sales. And by dramatic, I mean a 5% drop in IBM sales is dramatic when two-thirds of their sales base is automatic. It's a recurring, based on recurring contracts. So you only have about one-third of their sales base even up for grabs. And they drop 5% in total, which means, you know, a lot more of their variable revenue.
So put it in context with these layoffs we're seeing. We understand maybe 3,000 layoffs across the company and several hundred, obviously, in Vermont. How does all that fit together?
Two things. First, I'm going to put the blame right where it lies. IBM made this decision to pursue this $20 in earnings per share target in 2015, and management got a boatload of options. By my calculations, IBM has bought back $800 million of stock over the last 7 years. $300 million has gone to management. And how did this happen? This happened because IBM stock, when they announced this 2015 $20 in earnings per share plan, IBM stock started going up. So they just kept pushing and pushing and pushing. In my view, because of this paradigm change to the cloud, this plan is not workable. I think it was pretty obvious this is not going to work maybe a year, 2 years ago even. So I think what I saw late last year was a model under tremendous pressure, and I think it started to break in Q1 with a 5% sales drop. We'll see what next Wednesday's report reveals. I'm not hopeful that, you know, IBM's going to put up some big numbers. I actually think they're in a lot of trouble. So in terms of the job outlook, I've got to tell you, IBM is is a poorly positioned company.
Arnie, thanks for talking with us today. Appreciate it. Arnie Alson, who you can find his writing at seekingalpha.com. He joined us from his office in San Diego. Let's, in the minutes we have remaining, talk to Earl Mungin, who's with Alliance at IBM. Earl, thanks for joining us. Earl, are you with us?
So what I got to say is, you know, after all these layoffs, I mean, I've been working for IBM for 35 years here in Vermont. And we were, you know, the cutting edge of technology. You know, we've moved forward, you know, and we brought the company, you know, the revenue and the earnings it got because of the hardware we built here in Vermont. And we're seeing myself as an employee there. I work in manufacturing. And we're seeing that shift from investment instead of going into the company, into the infrastructure, into the employees. It's being spent, like your previous person I was on, with stock buybacks.
Now, so, IBM, Earl, let me ask you just briefly how you assess the future prospects for the IBM Essex Junction plant.
Well, I don't think they look good. My personal opinion is they don't look good because they're not investing. We have old equipment, old machinery. They aren't, you know, investing in the new technology that we need to stay current in the chip making process.
All right, Earl. Appreciate your comments today. We have one more moment to go back to Art Wolf, and in light of what we've heard over the last 10 or 12 minutes, Art, how do you feel about, again, IBM's ability to recover and the future of the Essex Junction plant?
Well, more pessimistic than I did about a half an hour ago. It doesn't sound good, but on the other hand, this is part of kind of the natural ebb and flow of businesses in Vermont and the U.S. You know, IBM has been a very important company, but there's a lot of very important companies in the U.S. that aren't around anymore, and it's really a question of management. And what Arnie was saying is he doesn't think management is really taking the right tack. That remains to be seen.
Art, appreciate your coming in today.
Sure.
UVM Professor of Economics Art Wolf. In a moment, we talk with reporter Sarah Harris about the two different stands taken over the F-35 jet fighter in two communities this week. This is Vermont Edition. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Steve Zandin for Bob Kinzel today. This week, there were several developments in the debate over basing the F-35 jet fighter at Burlington International Airport. Supporters of the fighter won a victory Tuesday when the South Burlington City Council reversed an earlier decision and voted to support having F-35s in their city. Then Wednesday night, Winooski, which would see increased noise levels from F-35 training missions, took an opposing stand when the City Council passed a resolution declaring the plane would not be welcome. Reporter Sarah Harris covered both meetings for VPR, and she joins us now. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Steve.
So both of these votes, Sarah, were preceded by public hearings. Give us a little flavor or a sense of what those hearings were like.
Sure. I attended Monday's hearing in South Burlington, and over 150 people showed up, and over 70 people testified, and they testified very passionately, one-third who supported the F-35 and two-thirds who didn't. Everyone was really articulate and fair. They had compelling arguments on both sides. And it was interesting to hear really passionate testimony from residents.
Yeah, I gather that toward the end of the meeting, or at least when it came time for the council to vote, things got a little chaotic.
They did. The vote was sort of pushed through by the chairwoman without an explanation of her particular vote. And some members of the audience weren't so pleased, and they had a whole discussion of Robert's Rules of Order, and people were shouting, and they were on their feet, and there was a lot of disagreement among the counselors because they didn't. Some felt they didn't have a complete discussion.
Let's hear a little bit of tape from that, just to give us a sense of what that moment was like.
We have a motion on the floor. Everyone has spoken.
No, you have not spoken.
I will have a discussion.
No, in Robert's Rules of Order.
Sarah, as we mentioned earlier, the vote this week represented a reversal of an earlier vote by the South Burlington City Council. Why did the council vote differently this time around?
The council is made up of five members, and there are two new members that were elected this past town meeting day in 2013. That's Pat Novak and Chris Shaw, and they're both supporters of the F-35. So the ratio of votes changed with the election of those two councillors.
Was the F-35 the big issue when voters were deciding who should be on the council on town meeting day?
I think it was one among several issues. The South Burlington City Council has had a fair amount of drama in the past couple of years. Sandy Miller, the former city manager, was fired in February. And there's been a lot of debate on development moratoriums and mismanagement of particular development efforts and the relocation of the National Gardening Association. So the city council had a lot of issues that I think voters were considering when they elected the two new councillors.
And we mentioned Wednesday night's vote by the Winooski City Council, which basically supersedes one they passed last year, a resolution they passed last year, which simply addressed noise, but from my understanding, didn't really single out the F-35. So this represents a change in position. Is that a fair assessment of what the City Council in Winooski did?
I don't think so. I think it's just a stronger position. I think last year the City Council was worried about excessive noise in the community and the effect that it would have on the downtown, on residents, particularly minorities, particularly low-income residents. And they had a real concern, but they were wanting more data about the F-35, more time. They kind of wanted to see how the scenario would play out. And I think with the new draft EIS statement that came out this spring, they were able to firm up their position a little more.
That Winooski vote by the city council followed an earlier public hearing this week in which townspeople turned out to express their views of the F-35. And as in South Burlington, the preponderance of opinion was against the F-35. Do you get a sense that that influenced the ultimate vote that some council members made?
I do think so. A couple of audience members noted that on Monday night, some councillors and the mayor seemed in favor of basing the plane. But the testimony in Winooski, unlike the testimony in South Burlington, was almost entirely made up of people who opposed the plane. In South Burlington, there were a fair number of people who testified in support of the F-35. In Winooski, there was just a handful out of, 50-some-odd people who testified. So I think that really made an impact on city councilors who last night or who on Wednesday night felt that it was really their job to represent the views of the community.
Let's hear a little tape from Winooski Mayor Michael O'Brien, who spoke with you after the vote.
It's about coming together to come to agreement on the council. And in these things, you have to compromise. And I think everybody compromised.
Also this week, F-35 opponents held a discussion session, and they had speakers who argued the noise generated by the planes represents a health hazard, especially for children. And there's a rally to oppose the F-35 scheduled for Saturday in Burlington. So there's been a lot going on around the F-35 issue this week. Sarah, what's the timeline for an actual decision by the Air Force on whether to base the planes at Burlington Airport?
Well, Steve, the timeline keeps changing. It's changed throughout the course of this debate. But right now, the comment period on the new draft environmental impact statement ends next week on July 15th. It's possible we may hear in the fall. It really is up to the Air Force, and they've been pushing this back and pushing this back.
Reporter Sarah Harris, thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you, Steve.
In addition to the F-35 debate and IBM layoffs, top stories in the news this week included the oil train derailment in Quebec, an announcement of a new plan to monitor mosquito-borne illnesses in the state, the Northeast Kingdom, which will have a new airplane manufacturer, farmers dealing with rain, and environmentalists saying that work needs to be done to clean up Lake Champlain. Those were some of the voices in the news this week.
You could still see over the tree line a huge, huge flame. You could hear the crackling over the sound of, concerned citizens just basically standing there watching their downtown center burn.
For every person who wants us to spray, there's another person who doesn't even want us to, who didn't want us to spray last year in response to illness.
It's a new idea. It's a worldwide market. And we have a marvelous physical facility here, a beautiful place in which to recreate, but also a wonderful place in which to learn about and become involved in the aviation industry as a pilot.
We've got 450 acres of corn, and I would guess that 75% of it is dead or not going to do anything.
I think every day that goes by that we are not adapting our pollution control programs to the reality of climate change, the increased precipitation, the taxing of our sewage treatment infrastructure, and the increased flooding risks, every day that goes by is a wasted day.
These stories and more regional news are online at vpr.net. That is our program for today. Monday, we'll learn more about the sheriff's office, what they do and the challenges they face. Comments, questions, welcome at vermontedition@vpr.net. Join us Monday at noon. Our program is produced by Patty Daniels, Rick Sangari, and Sage Van Wing, with production assistance from Annie Pruitt and Tim Johnson. Peter Biello directed. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Steve Zind. Have a great weekend.